Welcome home. We are WNST, Tassel Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I'm wearing my Costas Inn gear because I was at Costas Inn in the aftermath of Thursday afternoon's Miami miracle. I don't know. We have all other names for it. I saw Frank Reich and, Vinny Testaverde do other things down there over the course of time. But our friends at the Maryland Lottery putting us out on the road. The Gold Rush at Sevens Doublers. We will not be at State Fair on the 13th with Angela Alsobrooks. We are rescheduling that. So I just want to let everybody know that. But we're getting it out. I got like seven crab cake tours in and around what the opening day of football will be. So right around Labor Day. So stay with us. We'll be at doing it for Jiffy Lube Multicare. Went to Jiffy Lube Live last week and saw Sammy Hagar. So took my picture with my Jiffy Lube selfie down there if you're going down for any shows. Also, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water crystal clear. Luke Jones joins us now to discuss whatever that was in Miami. I put this ad on the web, and, you know, I have fun with my belt buckles, my rock and roll belt buckles. I get to wear my REO Speedwagon belt buckle. But I used an Aerosmith line, living on the edge. Dude, they are really scuffling a little bit. Weird stuff's happening in the bolt. This weird stuff everywhere. And whatever this shot in the arm we're all looking for by 6 p.m. on Monday or whatever it is, they better get that.
Well, they need to start playing better. They're scuffling a lot. I'm not going to say a little bit. They're scuffling a lot. They've played bad baseball for a month now. Let's call it what it is. It doesn't mean the season's over. It doesn't mean Luke Jones thinks the Orioles stink overall. But let's call it what it is. They have not played very well for about a month now. And you need to look no further than Brandon Hyde's post-game press conference on a nightly basis at this point. He's not really sugarcoating it. Now, he's not going to call out individual players or throw guys under the bus per se, but you can tell he's frustrated with what he's watching, and understandably so. Although even on as we're talking about Thursday afternoon's game, I kind of question some of the managerial decisions. You know, for example, why isn't James McCann bunting in the top of the ninth inning? And I know they had a 3-run lead and all of that, but I mean, it's just everything just feels off. And as much as the first 7 innings of Thursday's game felt on, and they had a six, you know, jump out to a 6-0 lead, and
even Cowser's coming back to life, right?
Sure. And look, I mean, it was good to see, and they won, and that was much better than the alternative. But when you have a final couple innings with your bullpen, with your defense, with some managerial decisions that were or were not made, I mean, you just kind of scratch your head. And obviously they retake the lead in the top of the 10th, and then they get two guys thrown out on the same exact play. I mean, it's just like,
it was an effort and frustration. It really was, right? Like, and they don't, I'll say this. I went to Costas in the aftermath and five people at the bar. I mean, Nick was, but there was a level of sort of frustration, and I'm like, it's July. I can't get that frustrated. But I think in the moment, in the ninth and 10th inning, you're like, but look, I've seen so much bad baseball. I don't mean to be a jerk, but I've seen so much bad baseball that blowing a game here and again in some sort of tripping around third base and falling down, like, kind of way. What was that guy's name? Jack. Come on, give me his name. Jack Cust, Jack Cust, right? You know, those slapstick, horrific moments that never defined a 72-win team or whatever, when they start playing like that, when mistakes start happening, and when they haven't frustrated us much over to, you know what I mean? Like, you haven't gone to bed angry or like, yeah, some nights starter's not good enough, you get beat, whatever, close game, Yankees beat you, you lose. I just sense over the last month this frustration because you feel like they're better than that. Like, if the Ravens lose three in a row in October, you'd be like, come on, you guys are better than this, you know?
Yeah, and that's really where it comes from. I mean, in 2019 and 2021, you shrugged your shoulders. Now, like you said, there might be some comedic moments where you're kind of scratching your head, or embarrassing moments, because it's just like, all right, that's going to make MLB Network and Sports Center, and you don't want to be on MLB Network and Sports Center for that reason.
Like 30-3 as an example, right?
Oh, sure,
you know, over
sure.
the course of years, you know what I mean? They had a lot of that, and now it's just every game matters to the fans. And obviously you start to look at the standings and seeing like teams are kind of getting back into some level of comfort that they're not running away and hiding the way we thought they were going to in June. You know what I mean? Like we kind of thought like they're the best team and they played like it and have, and right now we can't say that. And that's frustrating. I'll go back. Frustration is the word I'm sensing from the fan base. And here come the Padres off a no hitter.
Yeah. That said, I mean, I don't disagree with that overall sentiment, but who is the best team? Because the saving grace about this last month is the Yankees have been even worse. Cleveland, who has been so good in the AL Central, they haven't been great of late, and they have the same record as the Orioles going into this weekend series against the Padres. The AL West, okay, I get it. The Astros have surged, but they had to do a heck of a lot of surging just to get to the point where they're, what, 3 or 4 or 5 games over 500, right? Because they were so terrible the first couple months of the season. So, I mean, as it stands right now, as we're entering this weekend series with the Padres, you don't have a single team in the American League playing 600 baseball. Now, that's not out of the question. I mean, you don't have guaranteed 100-win teams in the AL every single year, but it does speak to no one running away with it, including the Orioles. So the saving grace is, yeah, the Yankees have been even worse. Boston has cooled off here. There was a lot of talk about the Red Sox and how they were playing before the All-Star break. Since the break, you know, it hasn't been quite as good for them. So they've come back to earth. The Rays, I mean, they traded Randy Arozarena to the Mariners, and I assume they're going to sell off some other players. And we've talked about that. Maybe there's an opportunity there for the Orioles to acquire something to help them in the right deal. And Toronto has been a disaster all year. So, you know, you look around the landscape of the league, and this is where, as frustrating as it has been, and you know, you have a wide range of people saying, you know, some people as extreme as the season is over, which, come on. We can't lose our heads entirely here. But on the flip side,
we don't take phone calls here anymore.
Sure. But, yeah. Well, look.
I just couldn't. I don't know that I could take it all day.
I mean,
you know, just.
But it's. Yeah. Every fan base is like that. Every fan base has that. But on the flip side, we're not going to also ignore the fact that they haven't played well for about a month now. And it's been ugly. It hasn't been like unlucky one run losses and things of that nature. They've been blown out a good bit too. I mean, I looked at it going into Thursday. They were 11-16 over a 27 game stretch. Now 12-16 after the win. That's their record since the series win in the Bronx a little over a month ago. But they have in that stretch, they have 9 losses of 4 or more runs. I mean, you know, they have a minus 39 run differential over those 28 games. I mean, that's, you know, you look at that pace, that's a 90 plus loss pace for about a sixth of the season now, you know, a sixth of the total season of games. So doesn't mean that this
takes
is
a 650 team and makes it a 590 team pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. It doesn't mean that this is who they are now. I think we all would agree, even if they weren't to make any moves at the trade deadline, they're better than what they've played over the last 3-4 weeks. That said, if you want to get back to a point where you're playing closer to 100 win baseball, and I'll say it over and over again, the objective is not to win 100 games, right? We saw last year that the Orioles won 101 and that did nothing for them in October. So it's not about that, but you do want to win the division. You do want to put yourself in a position where you're hosting and having home field advantage in the postseason as much as possible. And you've got to get back on track to do that. So we're going to see how this plays out. It feels like as we're entering the weekend, the trade market is starting to move. In fact, AJ Puck, who shut the Orioles down pretty definitively in that Marlins series, he goes to Arizona. So there's another move. And, you know, the simple reality, and this is just more the 30,000 foot look, not even in terms of, okay, who should they give up for player A? Who should they give up for player B? The simple reality is, Mike Elias has the ability, the capability of beating any deal that's made out there, other than if we're talking about taking on salary, and then that goes more, you know, with ownership and Rubenstein and what the payroll is going to go look like.
And that's
But
a mystery. And by
sure.
the way, to plug all the other things I've done this week, that's why I've talked to Kurt Bodenhausen. That's why I've talked to Eric Fisher. That's why I've had Maury Brown on. I've gone to the best people I know, an all-star team, literally, to discuss money, finance, baseball, Katie Griggs, how all of this plays into why you don't give Kobe Mayo away and why you don't love Anthony Santander, why you don't keep those guys around, and how Randy Arozarena winds up on a trade deadline block to be $1 million next year in Tampa. They want to do something else with that money, and they want to let the next guy come up, and hopefully you have it the next seat. So that's for Bisaccia this weekend. That's for Kobe Mayo, for O'Hearn and Mountcastle and Santander, as well as Hayes and Mullins, who don't know what their value is. Somebody said to me, Cowser doesn't have any value. Somebody said that this week
Oh.
to me, and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I but I don't know where in a trade how the Tigers or the White Sox would look at him. And it was something, and I'll leave this and let you go on and on, and Dylan Cease, because you're going to do trading deadline stuff, and that's cool. It's weird, though, when they're losing like this. We want to talk about the team, the team, the team. But, like, the trading deadline thing is above and beyond Manny Machado or Floppy Hat Night, or, you know, whether the Padres are wearing camo gear this weekend or wearing those whatever those suits are, that they birthday cake suits that they wear around. More than that, the trading deadline thing and the money that goes with it and the future, and so much is going to come into play maybe by the time you and I get together again over the weekend, you know?
No question about it. Just a side note, people need to lo start looking at Colton Cowser a little more carefully. He's better than what people are making him out to be. I think there are 29 other teams, maybe not 29, because, you know, there are a couple teams that might have a little more of a loaded outfield. He's a very valuable player. As he currently stands, is a valuable player. He might be. Not might, he definitely is at least their second best outfielder. And if you look at it from a metric standpoint, could be their best
Well,
outfielder.
if you judge him based just on his line over the last 90 days, he's a depressed asset right now, which is, by the way, what Kurt Bodenhausen called the Orioles
Well,
at $1.8 billion.
yeah, I still think people are missing the boat on Colton Cowser. Look, this is not to say he's the next Ken Griffey Jr. or anything crazy like that. He's a valuable player, though. He's a valuable player right now. Go look at what his OPS is compared to what Adley Rutschman's is right now after Adley Rutschman has been awful over the last month. It's they're neck and neck. So anyway, that's just a rant because I think a lot of people are looking at batting average and strikeouts, and they're not looking at the whole picture with someone who, my point is, he's a lot better, even as he currently plays, a lot better than people are giving him credit. And you know, the Orioles aren't going to give him up for a song. And you know, this goes into what I was getting ready to say, but you know, Connor Norby gets recalled. We know Mateo's out indefinitely. Jorge Mateo, his skill set definitely hurts if he's going to be out long term in terms of wanting this his speed off the bench, his defense to back up shortstop if Gunnar Henderson gets the flu or Gunnar Henderson turns an ankle and has to miss a few days. But you know, with Connor Norby, it's another example. If your name isn't Kobe Mayo, Samuel Basayo, and of course Jackson Holliday. There's almost this perception that I would even say, not even so much other teams, even Orioles fans themselves kind of view them as inferior guys. Connor Norby's a heck of a prospect. Connor Norby's the kind of guy that you're not trading away for nothing. And this goes back to my overall point about the trade deadline that, you know, so many people are saying, oh, well, they've got to trade Mayo or they've got to trade Basayo, or yeah, I would trade Jackson Holliday for Tarek Skubal. And, you know, it's just people have to pump the brakes about that. And that doesn't mean you don't entertain the idea whatsoever, but they have a lot of other really attractive prospects. And you're going to see a lot of teams that make trades that don't involve the Orioles are going to trade prospects for players that the Orioles. You know, you would say the Orioles might covet or the Orioles could use that guy. And they're going to trade him for prospects that are lesser than even the Orioles' second tier guys. So, one, that means, yes, the Orioles have the capability of making just about any move they want. But again, that doesn't mean that you just overpay just for the sake of doing it. That doesn't mean you just give away surplus value because, well, we have a lot of prospects, so let's just get rid of all of them because we need to make moves to help us in 2024. So there's nuance to this.
And
And
moving parts in regard
payroll
to
is
their
part of it.
rotation next year, in
Sure.
regard to depth at the organization. And again, this goes back to Ozzie and Eric on draft day. Again, who they really like and don't like, and how much they like them, and who's touchable and untouchable, and who, how they really feel about Kyle Stowers' upside, or Connor Norby's upside, or Bisaio's. I mean, they love all their prospects, right? But then when they start dealing them away, you'll be like, well, Ortiz, they just didn't see it here. They weren't feeling it here with Westberg, Norby, Hendry, like all of those people in those middle infield positions, just sort of like we have surplus. They have surplus everywhere, to your point, and how they give it away to say they really like Colton Cowser and they're just not going to make him available as a throw-in for Skubal.
No.
Even though that might be what you have to do to make that happen. And they'd say, well, could we play Hayes, Mullins, and win a World Series with him this year? And how would we feel about that later? There's just going to be a lot of feelings hurt if they make the kinds of deals fans want them to make, because names. Somebody's name we just said is not going to be here on Tuesday.
Sure, no question about it. I mean, even if it's some prospects that are the second or third tier, there's still guys that you and I don't necessarily talk about on a regular basis, but the fan base that had nothing but the farm system to pay attention to prior to 2022, it's going to be some. There are going to be some guys moved, and your point about Joey Ortiz. Look, they like Joey Ortiz, but Gunnar Henderson's better. They thought Jordan Westberg was better. And look, I mean, that's still to be determined, right? I mean, whether Jordan Westberg, Joey Ortiz, who's better 5 years from now. The point was he was blocked, and he was someone that they used to land an ace who pitched well again on Thursday, an ace who, for all the talk about this specific October and this specific run, I mean, he's as important as anyone to that, obviously. So, I mean, it's just. But I will continue to say until I'm proven different, until Mike Elias proves otherwise, I'm still not expecting them to trade a bunch of prospects here because, meaning trade their top guys, because I just don't think that they're going to be so nearsighted to say, okay, it's all about 2024 and then we'll figure it out. Because, you start trading Heston Kjerstad and Colton Cowser, and then it's like, all right. You're what? You're going to re-sign Cedric Mullins? What? You're going to re-sign Austin Hayes? Those aren't the kind of players, as they're currently valued, as they're currently producing, are guys that you're keeping long term. So then, what's your outfield going to look like in the next couple of years? So there's still the long term planning piece. Mike Elias is not going to deviate from that. I mean, I'll continue to say that. And no, that doesn't mean I'm sitting here saying they're not going to make any moves. They're going to make moves. I'd be stunned if they're not making at least a couple moves here to add some pitching. And boy, looking at Sun or at Thursday afternoon again, I'm going to continue to bang the table. Bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. I'm still more concerned about the bullpen than adding another starting pitcher. I'll continue to say that. And yes, I want them to add another starting pitcher, but you go out and get Tarek Skubal, but then you only make one decent but unremarkable addition to the bullpen. I'm still going to sit here saying I don't think their bullpen's going to get them
All right, well,
deep
let's go
into
bullpen.
October.
It's a great day to do that. Luke's here. He's Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs. He'll be at the ballpark. He's been running around with the Ravens, trying to get a suntan through the clouds and all that stuff. The Kimbrel thing, you're never the one to jump. I mean, a week and a half ago, we're praising him. And, when the team's scuffling, a lot of times, the closer could be in the middle of that, especially in close ball games. We're being counted on 5 nights a week to win games, right? Where are you on the Kimbrel thing? I mean, I think we've always been relatively weirdly lukewarm about it or him as the guy or the closer, or as you've said, a piece, a part of what needs to happen. And when he's not, and the eighth inning guy is the ninth inning guy, and the seventh inning guy is the eighth inning guy, and you're not even sure he's the eighth inning guy. And we go on and on and on. Guys start getting hurt. The last thing they need is to be squandering games they're actually winning in the seventh inning, Luke.
Yeah, and but I'll be honest with you. I'm still more concerned about getting to the ninth inning. And that doesn't mean that I have full confidence in Craig Kimbrel. I've been telling you since spring training that I still think Craig Kimbrel's not. First of all, he's not Felix Bautista, and everyone knew that from the moment they signed him. There wasn't a Felix Batista to acquire at that point in time. And now even the one guy that was out in the market that looked like he might be Felix Batista, Mason Miller, just, on his non-pitching hand, slammed a table and broke his pinky. So he's on the IL. That doesn't mean he's out for the year, but there you go. Now, is he even going to be dealt? Right? But my point with Craig Kimbrel is, and I've said this over and over, look, he's still way more good than not. He's still someone that you can trust to close a lot of games in the ninth inning. But and let's be clear, Thursday, we'd be remiss if we said that was all on Craig Kimbrel. I mean, Gunnar Henderson makes an error. Connor Norby stumbles on a ball that they could have gotten an out on. I mean, I don't care if it's the Miami Marlins or the Yankees or the Dodgers. You can't give a team extra outs in the ninth inning when it's a close game. I mean, you're begging for disaster there. So it wasn't all Kimbrel. But for me, I'll continue to go back to look at the postseason the last few years, look at the World Series teams the last couple of years, go through every single game of the postseason, and look how many bullpen arms they're using. Yes, that includes the Phillies, who have Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola and Ranger Suarez. Yes, that includes going back to the Braves a couple years ago. Yes, that includes the Astros, who had Dusty Baker, an old school manager who wasn't necessarily pulling his starters immediately, but they still used a ton of bullpen arms. So for as much focus as there is on the rotation and adding an upgrade for Dean Kramer as the number three starter, and I'm fully on board for that, but you better go add a couple bullpen arms, because who do you trust right now in this bullpen? I still trust Craig Kimbrel to a degree. Right? This isn't like him losing his closer's job or something like that. But is he so locked down that if you're playing so many one-run games in October, or forget about October, how about just August and September? If you're playing a ton of one-run games, is he going to be able to close out all of those in the way that it felt like Batista could last year until his elbow went up in late August? You need another high leverage guy. And when I say another high leverage guy, either some other team's closer or someone that has the kind of arm, the kind of stuff, the kind of makeup that you say, yeah, that guy's going to close some games too. Kimbrel's not being demoted, but we're going to have a 1 and 1A. And I feel like they need that. And I feel like they need another arm that they can slot in there somewhere in the Jacob Webb, Yennier Cano category, where a seventh inning guy who can also pitch the eighth inning sometimes. So, point is, I'm telling you, they need one really high leverage reliever and another guy that can pitch some high leverage for you. And
That's a lot of need. You're needy, Luke Jones. You're needy right now.
that's why I keep saying, I get it, rotation, and everyone has these dreams about having this great rotation. And we all romanticize what Jack Morris did for the Twins 35 years ago and all that, but there are very few starters in October that are going even seven innings, let alone the distance or anything like that. So you need bullpen arms. And who do you trust right now in this bullpen? I mean, I'm even giving you Kimbrel. I'm giving you Yennier Cano, even though he has not been good with an inherited runners all year. I've said for a while, Jacob Webb might be the guy I trust the most, but is he going to wear down? Because they're really leaning on him a ton. And we continue to see that. I don't really have a high level of trust in CNL Perez right now. Now, he did the job Thursday in the 10th inning, but we've also seen him struggle quite a bit. I don't have trust in many of their guys that they're trotting out there in their bullpen right now. So, again, starter, it's great. I'm on board with it. I'm not anti-adding a starter, let's be clear. But if
Who are you
you're
anti giving up? Kerstad, he's hitting the ball. I mean, I look at all of this wealth of these outfielders they have, and everybody's like, "Well, Mullins, Hayes, let go of the." I don't know the answer. I'm not. I none of these guys have floated my boat so much that I think they're untouchable, undealable. And you can jump on for Couser because of his defense and his upside and the pedigree, dude. These are thoroughbred racehorses. These are took us a whole year of losing to get one of these guys, right? So let's not go. And you still have 5 years of control. So don't get too enamored with the starting pitcher whose arm could fall off, which is always going to be the dealing bats for arms and growing the arms by the bats, whatever your McPhailism would happen to be, doesn't matter when guys get injured. You need guys out on the field. And but how many outfielders do you need? How many first basemen do you need? How many middle infielders do you need when you're trying to win the World Series? And we go here day after day after day and say we don't have enough pitchers.
Yeah, I mean it's not an easy answer, right? I mean
But if
I
three or
don't
four of these names are gone by Tuesday, right? And Mason Miller would have been a great example of like something that like a Couser, that probably would have had to, they probably want some major league help. Somebody got to go there and play. Somebody got to go to Sacramento and run around, next year. So I just keep thinking about like, so we wake up Tuesday and we have Skubal. I'm making this up, and pick your two relievers that you like. Who's gone? And we start to name the names, and it'd be like, it's not going to be Urias. You know what I mean? It's certainly not going to be
Sure.
Mateo right now. So I mean, it's not going to be the lesser guys. It's going to be guys we like too.
Sure. At the same time, I'll continue to say the Orioles have a different tier of prospects than most teams, and that doesn't mean they're going to deal from that. So there are still plenty of guys in the Orioles system that other teams are going to like. There are guys in the Orioles system that they like, but are not necessarily guys we're talking about on an everyday basis. Again, they're not the cream of the crop. They're not guys playing at the major league level right now. They're not even guys at Triple A. There are guys like that. So I still think they're going to be looking to deal more of those guys. And a lot of that is waiting and waiting and trying to figure out the right moment to deal these guys. Because especially with the market just starting to get rolling over the last day or two, the prices are still high. This is a seller's market. I think that's obvious when you look at the number of teams that we've talked about. Are they buying or selling? I mean, I just saw it was a report. What? I guess it was late Thursday night. Sounds like the Rangers are in it now, right? Whereas a few weeks ago, we were talking about them as a seller.
Yeah,
We talked
Evaldi
about,
was going to be our guy, right? He was going to be our Kyle Gibson, right?
right. I mean, Kirby Yates, their closer, is like, hey, maybe that's the kind of guy that would be attractive. Someone who's been around a long time too. So, it's just. You still have such a limited pool of teams where you say, okay, they are definitely selling. They are definitely sellers. I mean, even teams like the Rays, who are clearly selling off some guys, we've also seen the Rays be in that territory where they're like buying and selling at the same time. And that's where I've said, don't dismiss the possibility. And by the way, have you noticed there have been some other reports of, the Orioles saying that Ryan Mountcastle could be available on the right deal? And I've been saying that for a month now in terms of don't dismiss the possibility of even trading some of your major league talent in along with some prospects to land some other team's pitcher or land a couple pitchers from another team who feels good about their pitching, but they say, oh, we need another bat. So I'll still come back to my overall point, though, that bringing it back to the beginning of our conversation, how the Orioles have struggled over the last month. They haven't really swung the bats over the last month. I've seen more and more people even say, is there a right-handed bat out there that, a veteran outfielder or something like that the Orioles might add? I'm not going to say that's impossible, but I think it's much more a case of everyone around baseball is looking for a bat too. I mean, my goodness, the Yankees. We were just talking about the Yankees and the trade deadline, what, 10 days ago, 14 days ago, and look at their lineup on a nightly basis. They need probably a couple bats in addition to their pitching needs. So I don't think the Orioles are going to add a bat. I'd be kind of surprised by that. So they need their guys to start producing. They
Well,
need
there
their.
was a point where giving Santander away and saving the money and saving the offseason for a relief pitcher who could actually perform, that might not be a bad swap if you really like the young outfielders you have or you feel like you could get by. Those would be kind of like the really weirdly power moves to say, we need this more than we need that. And same thing with Mountcastle, whose name's been, thrown around or whatever. I don't know what the value. The Arozarena thing's interesting to me early on because you're pointing out something that I don't think about much, which is everybody else can't hit the ball. It's Mariners can't hit the ball. Nobody can hit the ball. And we got all these guys. Maybe one of these guys turns into the relief pitcher that's a really good, that's the first guy you're talking about, not the second guy. You know, reliever one, reliever to help Kimbrel, not reliever to backfill Brian Baker or CNL Perez. But giving away a starter or a perceived starter when you say, well, we can still win the World Series with Hayes and Mullins and Kerstad and Stowers and on and on and on and on. We can move this and that and get Mayo in here. We're bringing Holiday up. There's going to be extra space. Like, I don't know what the big picture is, but this is the week we figure that out to some degree because there are moving parts. I mean, I would think Mike Elias is going to do stuff by Tuesday that on Friday morning he didn't think he was going to do.
Yeah, and I think they're going to acquire a couple guys that, you know, aren't necessarily guys that we've been talking about, right? I mean, might be someone that's kind of under the radar, might be someone that, frankly, another team wasn't really expected to move someone. And maybe there's someone where they say, hey, that's a good match, and we like this guy in their system. He's not the top prospect, but he's someone we liked in the draft, and they've developed him, and he's someone that's going to be really good for us 2 years from now, you know? So, I mean, it's just, it's so difficult to talk about this because there's just so much unknown. I mean, there's this market. You've heard the Ken Rosenthals of the world talking about this. It's a way bigger
pool of people than who the Ravens are going to draft at 27. But from a talking point perspective, right?
Oh, sure. Well, but it's such a big pool of possibilities. But what is the actual pool, though? What is the actual number of guys that are going to be moved that are really moving the needle, right? And that's where, again, it's
tough. What's actually going to happen, too. You know, sure. We're going to talk a lot about it. In the end, are they going to make two deals, three deals? How many deals with how many teams involving how many players are the Orioles going to my over under would be, I think they're going to make three deals that will involve 12 players. And I'm talking about down the line, rookie ball. There'll be names thrown around in organizations. That's a lot of personnel, you know, to scout and know, and what three deals, and we're going to do this with the Cardinals. We're going to do that with the Mariners. We're going to do, however, it's a really complex thing, you know? And I guess this is why over the weekend, if Elias shows up for 20 minutes in the booth and does a little papal blessing for everybody on a full day and the wheels aren't falling off, that might not be a bad temperature thing, but I would think he's really busy, man. You know what I mean? It doesn't get any busier than this in the history of the franchise, where the balance of we don't have enough pitching, but we're good enough to win the World Series. We haven't said we're good enough to win the World Series like how many times ever. And the window's there, and you have a one starter and you have a two starter and you have these amazing kids. You just stole the All-Star game with the pitcher and the catcher, and you got pretty decent health on the field. Like, there's a lot of expectation for them to do a lot of things, not make one deal that involves four players this weekend and say, well, we're good. Because I don't think that'll be good enough, right?
Well, but I also think you're looking at it a little bit too simplistically, in the sense of who's hot? Who gets hot in September? At this time last year, the Rangers were not what they ended up being. And the Arizona Diamondbacks certainly were not talked about in those terms whatsoever. And it's not like the Diamondbacks had this, you know, they had a 1-2 punch in their rotation. And then after that, it was kind of an unknown, right? So that's where I keep saying, like, I get it. I'd like to see the Orioles upgrade from Dean Kramer too, but is that upgrade going to be someone that is pitching seven innings in a postseason game? I still think it's probably someone who's probably seeing a lineup twice, and then you're turning it over to the bullpen. And that's why I keep saying bullpen, 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 because
my God, Jack Flaherty's name has come up several times this week, right?
Like, you know what? Hey, but Jack Flaherty might end up being the best pitcher that's moved in terms of how he's performing in 2024. Because again, I'm still not convinced that Skubal's being dealt. If he is, then fine. Of course, Skubal's the best starting pitcher dealt on this market. But if it's not him, you know, Jack Flaherty, albeit a rental, albeit, you know, we're talking about a one-year sample, he still might be the best. And I saw Ken Rosenthal say that the Orioles wouldn't be opposed to going down that road again. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'd be doing cartwheels about it, but if he ends up being the best starter that's moved and the Orioles land him, then so be it. And you hope it goes way better this
time. Hey, life
is
about second chances, Luke.
Sure. I mean, look, you know, again, so much of this, and I talked about this in one of our recent conversations, when you're talking about the trade deadline, there's a very real human element to that in terms of someone being dealt, uprooting their family in the middle of the season, coming to a new organization, someone who might have a very defined way of doing things, and maybe that doesn't mesh well with the new organization. And it doesn't mean like you hate each other or anything, but it's just like, hey, we did it We did it like this here, and now you're asking me to do it like this here.
Everybody in our audience, everyone watches us every day, has had a job or gone to a new school or gone into a room with new people or gone to a new place or, you know, driven a new way to work. And, you know, that's always a challenge. But
sure.
Every name we've mentioned here in the last 30 minutes across all these organizations, all these names, I mean, they're all people who have wives, families, kids, that houses, this, that, luggage, furniture, all that, that's in the balance this whole weekend, because they know they could get tapped on the shoulder. Any, they're ball players. It's not for long, right? Even though we call it Major League Baseball and they'll say NFL, yeah. It's not for long in baseball either.
And right now, as we're talking about all these different names, and we've talked about a lot, and you can go to any website and find 100 guys that are on these lists of possible guys being traded, even some of the very best ones, guess what? They're going to go to a new team and they're not going to play very well. We see it every single year where there are guys who get dealt and you think it's going to be, you know, guys that are even more highly regarded than Jack Flaherty at last year's trade deadline, right? I mean, Flaherty is the easy recent example for the Orioles, but you find it every year. Some notable impact players dealt and it does not go well with their new team. And think about it, that new team who gave up real minor league talent or maybe a major league player that they sent and to acquire someone that's the missing link, you know, the so-called missing link for their World Series hopes, and it doesn't work out. So it's where I've said, look, yes, I fully expect the Orioles are going to make a couple moves here, but if we're talking about this team playing the third and fourth week of October, chances are it's still going to be way more that Corbin Burnes is a stud, Grayson Rodriguez pitches like a stud, and Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and Anthony Santander and Jordan Westberg and who knows, maybe Jackson Holliday, maybe Kobe Mayo. It's because those guys are hitting the ball when it really matters and they're playing their best baseball again down the stretch, and that translates, you know, that when you turn the calendar to October, it continues. So, look, the trade deadline's fun. But it's also, I mean, there's such a combustible time. It's such a strange time. I think teams and players are on edge. And look, that's not an excuse for the Orioles right now. But, you know, that's part of what every team's dealing with right now in terms of whether you're a defined seller and you know that guys are in your major league clubhouse are definitely leaving. Or if you're a team like the Orioles who very clearly are buying, but okay, is it just going to be lower level guys, or is it going to be one or two guys that are in your current clubhouse? You know, whether we're talking about even a veteran player like a Mountcastle or you know, Heston Kerstad or Connor Norby, whoever it is. So there's that tension there. Anyone who covers baseball, and I'll leave you with this final point. Anyone who has covered Major League Baseball, you know, for a long time will tell you that last week to 10 days leading up to the trade deadline.
Right after the All-Star game. The All-Star game.
That's a tense time for a major league clubhouse. It really is. I mean, I'll be in the clubhouse all weekend, right? Leading into Tuesday's deadline. And MLB Network will be on. And you'll see graphics because we see it all the time, right? You know, the talking heads and the studio shows, they'll put up their potential trade that they like. And they'll literally put up a graphic that will have one or two guys that are sitting in that clubhouse, maybe watching that TV, maybe not. And it'll be a hypothetical trade that they're being sent to some
other
team.
Or when a trade happens, I played with him somewhere that, you know, sure. They see these, and he's in my phone. They text him good luck. And sure. The Latin players all know each other. And the guys that came year to year, all, you know, guys that have been dealt around. I mean, you know, this organization's pretty inbred, but there's still, you know, there's some outsiders in this organization as well, you know?
Sure. Well, in Miami, you know, Tanner Scott, he was with this team a couple years ago. So you have some of that, but it's just, it's a tense time. It's an unsettling time. Sure. I don't think Gunnar Henderson has any worries that he's being traded, right? I mean, so you obviously have some guys that, you know, aren't going anywhere in any plausible scenario, but you also know that there, you know, a couple of veteran players could be dealt, or a couple of these prospects that are, you know, kind of have been hovering at the major league level, or, you know, ping ponging back and forth, you know, they could be dealt. So, you know, your best friend could be dealt, you know, so there's some of that. And that's not exclusive to the Orioles. And let me be clear, that's not an excuse for how they've played over the last few weeks whatsoever. And I'm not suggesting that, but just in a general sense, It's kind of a high-strung time for a major league clubhouse.
Especially when you're not playing well. Let's add that into it.
Exactly, because that's the other thing you don't know. Is your general manager going to be a little more rash, a little more hasty in making moves? Or I don't think that's Mike Elias. I think Mike Elias is still going to look at bigger sample, bigger picture, still look at the fact that, this is a team that's, still on a pace for well over 90 wins, so they're going to make moves. And once the dust settles Tuesday night, and more so Wednesday, when guys start to report that have been traded, then we'll have a better idea. And then you kind of settle in and you say, okay, this is our roster, albeit the Orioles still have guys that they can call up from AAA that I still think will be here. And, we'll see how it plays out. But, it's exciting, but it's also a really anxious time. And I think the Orioles and every other team in baseball is dealing with that to varying degrees in terms of how this is really going to look. But now that we've started to see some trades being made, I expect the market to really pick up, and we'll see exactly what the Orioles are going to do. I still, whether it's going to be big, big moves or more modest moves, I still tend to lean towards the more modest because I just think that's how Mike Elias is going to operate. But that said, back in January, I wouldn't have necessarily said I expected them to acquire Corbin Burns. And then lo and behold, February 1st, they did that. So, expect anything at this point in time. But that said, I still don't think we're going to see Jackson Holliday traded. And I'm still not expecting necessarily that we're going to see Mayo or Basayo traded. But, if it's Tarek Skubal, chances are you're going to have to at least give up one of those guys to get him. So, we'll see how this plays out here over the next few days, and it's going to be exciting, and certainly want to be following us on our social media channels to monitor everything that's happening from Camden Yards.
You said high anxiety, and I remember that being a movie back in the 70s, a Mel Brooks movie. I don't know that I ever saw it. I'm reading up on it, but actually, a Barry Levinson, Oriole fan, was involved in high anxiety. So a big weekend this week. Manny Machado, you're going to get one of those sexy little floppy hats to give to Uncle Nestor, with the Baltimore, the City Connect. I went through all that with Todd Radom this week. A segment just for Luke Jones for fashion nerds. I've also had Mari Brown on this week, had Kurt Bodenhausen on this week. Marty Conway came on for 45 minutes and schooled me for Katy Griggs. So we have all sorts of really cool stuff coming out in the audio vault. Also out at Baltimore Positive. Luke's around chasing the Ravens. We'll get to that. And Manny Machado's back here this weekend. And trading deadline, my mom's birthday weekend. It's hot out. There's a lot of rock and roll being played and a high anxiety amongst Orioles fans. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are Baltimore Positive.com. Stay with us.